Morning, everyone. Welcome to Center Finance. It's Tuesday, March 10th. Person at the table, Senator Machicki, Senator Bishop, Senator Dunleavy, Senator McKinnon, Senator Hoffman. Senator Olson is on a plane right now, and he'll be here. Is he going to be here during this meeting? Okay, he's in flight. We're going to just have some quick presentations by the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I don't think I got any questions forwarded on labor, but nonetheless, if Commissioner Dragas, are you, you want to come up and present? And Senator Bishop, if you want to just kind of run the show here a little bit, it's your committee, if you want to have some questions to ask or anything like that, go right ahead. Hello, Paloma, you're going to join us as well? Paloma Harbor. I worked with Paloma at the university, and I've decided she has the coolest name on the planet.
She has my right arm and my left arm.
I used to bug her about that. It never gets old, though. So go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record, and go ahead and get started. And if you want to break in with questions, go ahead. Click. I know you have a few that you may want to, a few directions you may want to go with, so go right ahead.
Sure.
For the record, my name is Heidi Dragas. I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And let me know if this is too loud. I'm a loud talker, so I just want
to. Actually, you have a tone to your voice that makes it a little bit difficult to hear, so go ahead and bring it in a little closer.
Is that better?
Don't know. We'll see. Okay.
Well, thank you very much to the committee for inviting me here today. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. I graduated from Lathrop High School and attended the University of Alaska Fairbanks as a history major. After that, my dad said that in $2.50 will buy me a latte, which was about 15 years ago, so with inflation it's a little bit more. So I went to law school. I attended Willamette University in Salem, Oregon. Graduated in 2003, came back to Anchorage, and I clerked for the Honorable Judge Pengilly in Fairbanks for a year, and after that decided I had spent enough time in Fairbanks and I was going to try my luck in Anchorage. I moved to Anchorage. I worked at a law firm, Guess and Rudd. I practiced insurance defense for about a year, and then an opportunity came up to join the Alaska District Council of Laborers as their general counsel, which was a pretty unique opportunity, I think, for me. I've always been passionate about workers' rights, and so I served in that capacity with the laborers for 10 wonderful years, and thought I'd retire there with a union pension and walk into the sunset, and then this interesting opportunity presented itself. So anyway, here I am. And so far, I think I am surprised by how much I enjoy the position. It's really been wonderful. It's a wonderful department. So thank you very much. So the department's mission is pretty simple. We provide safe and legal working conditions to advance opportunities for employment in Alaska. The department accomplishes this mission through its key worker priorities of protecting Alaska's workers through statutory and regulatory consultation and enforcement, developing an Alaskan workforce for Alaskan jobs, and income replacement for unemployed or disabled Alaskan workers.
We generally tell people on the mission statement and philosophy and those kinds of things, to because this is the budget that we're trying to get to here, if you could skip as much of the mission and philosophical stuff and the org charts as possible, and then get to the budget.
Jump right into it?
Yeah.
We can go right through these slides. This slide just shows you some of our office locations, job centers, and other services that we provide. We can go right through that. We'll show you our department organizational chart, I think, which will help a little bit orient yourself with the department's three key missions and where our budget is focused. We'll go through that slide. I'll try to go through these ones quickly. I think they're important. In the area of protecting Alaska's workers, the state saw a significant reduction in the workplace time lost due to illnesses and injuries from a rate of 100 employees I'm sorry, from a rate per 100 employees of 1.13 in fiscal year 2013 to a record low of 0.61 in fiscal year 2014. And this is important because this decrease was a direct result of the Division of Labor Standards and Safety developing a 10-hour OSHA safety course that was used to improve safety in the target industry of seafood processing. And the majority of the decrease occurred in that industry, and we're very proud of that. We're concerned because the other body is proposing eliminating the funding that supports these efforts. And in the end, we feel very strongly that developing proactive programs like this, which keep workers safe, functions actually as a cost savings measure overall. And so eliminating this funding for workplace safety programs, I believe, is short-sighted. In the area of workforce development, the vocational rehabilitation program's performance has remained strong.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, you may.
Could you go back one slide?
Yes.
So those reduction rates reflect overall or just the seafood industry?
Correct. The reduction rates are overall, but where we really stepped up efforts is what we did is developed a 10-hour training course. It was basically a train-the-trainer course where we went to industry. We trained key people in the seafood processing industry to train their employees to for better handling of seafood, mainly on the slime line, but it's fraught with workplace injuries. It was just proved extremely successful in that 1 year. We can attribute that rate of decline to that program specifically, and it cost $300,000, which may seem like a lot to some people, but it's a tiny drop in the bucket comparatively.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also would like committee members to know, you probably already know this, but the lower we can keep our incident rate in Alaska workplace injuries, the lower our overall work comp premiums are going to be for everybody. So not fully, I support keeping the consultation department whole in that area because I really believe, and we're going to find that over the course of the summer as we break down further and get into the analytical discussion on our individual departments, that cost-benefit analysis, and I personally don't think that is a prudent cut in this area right here.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Machiki?
For those that don't recognize the significance of moving the bubble on lost workday cases, this is a significant reduction of almost 300% in a very short time, and I agree with Senator Bishop that cost some of our reductions, the unintended consequences can be far higher than the cuts that we're making. It is an area where we should focus.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you. In the area of workforce development, vocational rehabilitation program's performance has remained strong. In 2014, DVR had 607 individuals employed upon exit from the individualized plan for employment, which is an increase from 598 in fiscal year 2013 and the second highest level on record. The average wage of employed individuals exiting the DVR program equaled $14.31, an increase from $13.84 in fiscal year 2013, and Alaska is regularly among the top 15 in the nation for average wage in this area. In the area of income replacement, the department saw a marked improvement in the timeliness of Fisherman's Fund claim payments from an average of 60 days in fiscal year 2013 to an average of 47 days in fiscal year 2014. This reduction resulted from an implementation of follow-up protocol that quickly notifies claimants of any missing documents required to process their claims. And these successes are due in large part to existing public and private partnerships. And we work very hard to develop these partnerships. Some of these examples include providing work keys assessments to all Military Youth Academy participants before they graduate, coordinating special training and apprenticeship programs for incarcerated adults at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center and the youth at the Johnson Youth Center in Juneau that prepare Alaskans for reentry. And we actually had an opportunity to go out to the Johnson Youth Center last week to look at some of the programs they're utilizing our grant funds for some of these reentry programs, and they really do a phenomenal job. It was a really great opportunity for us to visit some of the areas that the Department of Labor has an impact. In other ways, we provide economic, demographic, or training program outcome data through our research and analysis section to help inform workforce development investment decisions. Some examples of private nonprofit partnerships include working with employers to post our labor exchange, post their jobs on our labor exchange system, and providing assistance and support to employees of employers that may be facing layoff through our rapid response programs. And we just heard about that this morning. The city of Bethel, Swanson's Grocery is going to be closing in Bethel, and we're going to be working with the city of Bethel to coordinate a rapid response program to make sure that we can help those workers that are displaced find jobs in the area. We're working on that actually as we speak. We also provide workforce development grants that support training programs offered by many private nonprofit organizations. This is also an area of concern because continuing and expanding partnerships may be a challenge if these entities that we partner with have their funding reduced or eliminated altogether.
Could you pause just a moment? Are there any other questions or comments on
so far?
Go ahead.
Commissioner, the Construction Education Foundation, that's in jeopardy in the other body, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and how much of that grant, if you can use Paloma as a lifeline, how much of that funding goes directly to K-12 to bring high school students in to the trades?
We're talking about the funding for the Alaska Construction Academy.
Yes.
The funding that specifically goes to the K through 12 is about $2 million.
Thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to publicly disclose that my husband is the CEO and serves on the board of directors of the Construction Academy Foundation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, Commissioner, you made a comment that the issue in Bethel that you're going out to help those workers that may be displaced. The chances of us displacing a number of workers the next year or two through this budget process is going to be pretty great.
Correct.
So are you having discussions and gearing up to assist what could be a large or a significant number of folks that may be looking for other types of work?
The answer is yes. I think one of the things we're very concerned about is making sure that our UI fund is solvent. And the fund looks good right now. There was some, the legislature adjusted the rate, the UI contribution rate a couple years ago. So we're a little bit concerned. We are keeping a very close eye on that. I think it's important that we keep that solvent. And where there are specific areas of the state where there are displaced workers, we have this rapid response program where we send a handful of employees specifically into those targeted areas to help with those displaced workers. We have some folks in the Kenai area, and we're also going to be dispatching them to Bethel as well. But we are preparing and ramping up. You know, we hope that it will be a significant effect in the economy as far as our budget is concerned for displacing workers, but we need to be prepared.
Thank you. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a little correction, 75% reduction in lost work case days, not 400. Going back up to the increase would be 400, but the reduction was 75%. But the comment I wanted to make was on the rapid response. So just when Agrium went out of business, your program kicked in, and you know, your department can talk about your successes and all of that using numbers, but it's hard for people to understand. I will say that 2 years later when we the industry was hiring and looking for people. They thought that a lot of those folks were going to still be around after Agrium, which was a major plant, shut down, and all of them had been placed in other high-paying positions. It was very difficult to get them back to the Kenai to work. So the success, when you want to look at it on a community level, was extraordinary. So we look at charts all the time. When you think about personal lives and how you've helped the lives of Alaskans, the program works.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Senator. That really is the point, too. It's really about affecting people's lives. When someone loses a job, that's one of the most devastating things that can happen to them, and that's why we take great pride in our rapid response program to make sure that we can get into those communities quickly and try to diminish the loss that they feel as quickly as possible by trying to place them in jobs that hopefully will result in, you know, similar wages and pay, but ultimately find them something to feed their families and heat their homes. On to the budget. The department's fiscal year 2016 governor's endorsed budget totals $179.5 million, 53% of which is federal funds. The department's unrestricted general funds in the fiscal year 16 endorsed budget totals $29.2 million, which is down $4.2 million from the current year, fiscal year 15. This is equivalent to a 12.8% reduction. To implement this reduction, the department is focusing on the governor's goal of redesigning administrative services to maintain maximum program and services delivery. The cuts proposed in the governor's endorsed budget are significant enough that there will be direct service implications. But these decisions were informed and reasoned. I'm committed to continuing to streamline services, find efficiencies, and develop partnerships to maintain key programs and services. But reductions must be made thoughtfully and responsibly, and we do not believe that the reductions made by the other body's subcommittee fit those key criteria. The governor's endorsed operating budget includes a number of changes for the agency, including the reversal of one-time and temporary increments such as the Youth First Compass Alaska program and the Alaska Vocational Technical Center Registered Nurse program. Some designated fund increases for the Technical and Vocation Education Program, TVEP, and other program receipts authority to allow AVTEC and the Alaska Safety Advisory Council to expend additional funding if they generate it through fees or sponsorships.
Commissioner, can you pause just a moment, Senator
sure.
Bishop?
Commissioner, is this the decrement in the UGF for AVTEC for the nursing program, is that just for the RN program or is that the CNA LPN program as well?
This reversal is only for the RN program.
Thank you.
But the other programs have also been cut as well. The Allied Health program also includes the LPN and RN program, which is at the Muldoon Job Center. It's currently housed at the Muldoon Job Center, and that program has also been cut.
Okay. Well, thank you. Just to follow up, I want to dive deeper into that when we get into subcommittee work. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Dunleavy.
For the chair, Commissioner, I'm not sure exactly what your phrase was, but you indicated that the administration was in disagreement with the recommended cuts the House had made.
The House subcommittee.
Yes. Could you repeat what you said, please?
I believe what I said was probably the previous.
Instead of criteria or something.
I said I believe it's very strongly that reductions must be made thoughtfully and responsibly. And I do not believe that the cuts that came out of the House subcommittee were responsible or thoughtful.
Will you have, as we go through this process, any additional recommendations for cuts or reductions above and beyond what was submitted by the governor's budget?
We'll continue to look at our programs to see where else we can make reductions. I want to be careful. I think there were reductions made that I don't want to call reckless, but I'm not sure that I think in the end they're going to perhaps cost more money in the end than the cuts provide. Simply by, you know, for example, the OSHA funding, I think actually hurts our bottom line more than it helps. We'll continue to try to identify other areas. I think a lot of the cuts came in the area of workforce development, and I don't think now is a time, even given the budget situation, to abandon our efforts or diminish our efforts to develop Alaska's workforce and put Alaskans on Alaska's jobs. And the cuts that were made in the House subcommittee do just that. It makes it much more difficult for us to do our jobs, which is to try to develop our own to put them out on the job, which brings more money back into our economy. It's a cyclical effect. I understand that the other body subcommittee had difficult decisions to make as well, and I know that they did their best to do that. So this is my belief as far as our budget and knowing the programs that we do and the services that we provide. We took out of the subcommittee a 31% cut in 1 year. And I think that could be more carefully and reasonably made and should not have gone that deep. We took the biggest percentage cut of any department.
Thank you.
Senator Richicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I really love when someone says that I don't want to use the word reckless, because it means you did use the word reckless, but that's a famous attorney trick, which you are. I prefer that commissioners are not compliant to the legislature. I think you being honest on, I'd like to see the passion on you defending your program, so I hope you'll continue doing that. Not all the departments are being that way because of where we are, but I think it will result in the best answer as we make these cuts. So thank you for that.
I'll just remind the committee, too, that the commissioners are not here to argue against their boss's budget. Okay, go ahead.
Which I'm not.
That's the point.
Let's make that clear. Okay. So back to the governor's endorsed budget overview. Also included are some known reductions of federal and other state funds, interagency receipts that support the Alaska Job Center Network. I'll talk a little bit more about that. In fiscal year 2016, the department will experience a $1.7 million decline in federal funding available to support the Alaska Job Center Network. This network consists of field staff in 20 job centers across the state. Staff at these centers provide employment and training services and resources and connections between employers and job seekers. The department is currently looking at alternative solutions to avoid job center closures. One example includes the job center in Seward, where the current staff member is retiring and the Alaska Vocational Technical Center can take over operation of the job center. So we'll save a little money there. We were hoping to pursue more partnerships like this in other communities with regional training centers, and many of these centers already provide employment and training services to training participants and could expand these services to the broader community. However, as I mentioned previously, this is an area of concern because the other body subcommittee is currently proposing cuts to three regional training centers that range from 32% to 49%.
Senator Dunleavy.
Through the chair, Commissioner, I would imagine, just please confirm that your department is looking at the concept of redundancy of programs.
Correct.
And will you be coming out in the near future with a game plan whereby there's a concentration in one particular training center for specific, whether it be carpenters or pipe fitters, another outfit might be engaged in totally something else so that folks can... We can consolidate and reduce costs, but also maintain quality?
This is a big question, and it's a good one. The governor has made it clear that he wants to focus on CTE, career and technical education. It is one of his priorities. It's one of our department's priorities. To that end, we're doing multi-fronts. We're working at looking at our own programs, trying to eliminate duplication, working with industry to make sure that we have the training programs that industry needs. We are not in the business of training simply to train. We want to train to put Alaskans to work. To that end, we have also engaged in several discussions with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, with President Gamble, and with Commissioner Hanley at the Department of Education to work on looking at our collective CTE programs to find out what each of us does best, where we have areas of duplication that we can eliminate, where can we find efficiency. We clearly need to tighten our belt in the area of CTE and work better collaboratively, and we're in the process of doing that. We've created a CTE task force, which is a small group that's looking at the CTE program that the three departments developed 5 years ago now, in 2010. We're looking at that, honing in on that, and one of the things that all three of us, President Gamble and Commissioner Hanley and myself, are committed to is getting things done. We don't want to just put lip service to this. This is important to our state, and we are digging in, but we absolutely have to find efficiencies and duplications, and so that's part of the process.
Go ahead.
In that whole mix, you foresee a continued robust presence for private providers of training as well. In other words, are they going to be, because of the budget reductions, are they going to be cut out of the mix, or are they going to be a central focus as well as some of the labor training, labor-associated outfits as well?
Well, we have, you know, both union and non-union private partnerships, and those training opportunities, apprenticeship programs, all have the ability to apply and compete competitively for our STEP grants, which they do. Our STEP program is a terrific program that provides those monies. So we are continuously trying to develop and nurture those relationships, because that's really where the training gets done, is through those. And so that's why we want to the extent we can, maintain a robust reserve of grants for those programs. So the job center, so we're good?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. We'll keep moving on. The governor's endorsed operating budget also includes a $300,000 unallocated restriction, unrestricted general fund. It's like a word soup when I'm talking about the budget. A $300,000 unallocated, unrestricted general fund reduction that was part of the work in progress budget released on December 15th. And an additional 8% or $2.5 million UGF decrease from the level released at that time. In alignment with the governor's goal of redesigning administrative infrastructure to maintain maximum program and services delivery, the department is going to bear the majority of that $300,000 unallocated reduction in the commissioner's office and in the administrative services division. The department will be deleting three positions from these sections and streamlining services to ensure minimal impact to support services provided to the department's programs. Now, I should clarify that those are not the three positions that were eliminated by PCN and the other bodies subcommittee. These are three separate positions. The $2.5 million reduction will entail less funding available to offset lease expenses, closure of the AvTech Anchorage campus, which houses their allied health program, which is, as Senator Bishop mentioned, the certified nurse assistant and licensed practical nurse program, as of November 2015, to allow those current enrollees to complete their program, and other administrative and support position cuts, such as grants administrators and research analysis, just to name a few.
Commissioner, could you pause just for a second?
Yes.
So the governor gave you in the endorsed budget a $300,000 unallocated reduction and an additional 8% reduction that was specified throughout your budgets. And then what was the additional amount that the House took out?
The House took out an additional amount of $6 million, which was, it took us to 31%.
Right. So it's $2.8 million plus an additional $6 million. Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. For the record, Paloma Harbor, the Administrative Services Division Director for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the total unrestricted general fund reduction in the FY16 governor's amended budget was $4.2 million. Just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
Thank you. So back to my question. So it was 4.2 plus how much?
6.1.
Okay. Go ahead.
Which is an additional almost 20%.
Okay.
Additional impacts of the $2.5 million reduction include a reduction in the amount of adult basic education instruction hours offered, which operates a lot of the GED program that we provide for individuals, the elimination of a wage and hour investigator, and less funding available through pass-through grants. Again, the department's committed to streamlining services, finding efficiencies, and developing partnerships to maintain key program priorities and services. For example, to offset the reduction in wage and hour investigation staff, the department will cross-train other department investigators, such as workers' compensation and investigators, to conduct wage and hour investigations when traveling. The governor's endorsed capital budget includes a reappropriation of the unexpended balance on the AvTech Third Avenue dormitory project to cover required information technology upgrades to meet state statutory requirements.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, what was the total number of ABE test takers last year that got diplomas? Do we know that? Do you have that off the top of your head?
I believe it was around 1,700 that received their GED, but I can get you an exact figure.
So with this reduction, do you see less people being able to come forward and test now?
I'm going to have Paloma answer that. I think she knows about that program more specifically.
Thank you. Again, for the record, Paloma Harbor. The adult basic education program estimate that this reduction will serve about 80 less individuals in a year. They did, so just so every the test, the GED test, underwent a significant change in 2014 to a computer-based test, and it's much more difficult. They re-standardized the test, and it's more difficult. So it's going to require, in the last year, there were only 694 individuals that tried to take the test, and not all of those passed the test. And that's down from 1,700. So it'll take a lot of instruction just to teach them how to take a computer-based test to get them ready to take the new test. So there will be a demand on this program, but we're not seeing the number of test takers that we've seen in the past.
Follow up, Senator Bishop.
I just, you know, that's a little troubling to me, and I would like you guys to consider. You know, I keep harping on this, and it's not a dig, but, you know, the governor keeps talking about these public-private partnerships, and I was wondering if, you know, if you guys put your thinking hat on and look at, can I work with the university, can I work with another provider to help with these instructional hours, because, you know, not everybody goes to high school. GEDs are another way into an apprenticeship program, whether it's a union or a non-union program. And I don't want to put up another barrier that an Alaskan can't get into the workforce.
Yeah. Thank you. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On slide 10, under the $300,000 unallocated unrestricted general fund reduction, you indicate that you're deleting three positions from the commissioner's office and administrative services. Are those filled positions or unfilled positions?
They are. They will not result in any layoffs. What we've done is move some people around into different positions so that it eliminates some vacancies.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask that is because the reoccurring cost expense, if they were filled, would actually save in perpetuity money going forward versus reoccurring savings. So I understand that we're cutting the FTEs and the associated dollars from those FTEs.
Paloma, did you have a follow-up? Go ahead, Commissioner.
So I've spent about 3 months at the Department of Labor. It's a wonderful department. It's filled with very dedicated employees. The one thing that has really struck me is the longevity in the department. You go around to the different divisions, and people have been there for 10 and 20. And just last week, we did a 25-year pin ceremonies for individuals that have dedicated that amount of time to the state of Alaska, and most of that in the Department of Labor. People feel passionately about the work that they do, protecting workers, making sure that workers who are out of a job have the means to support their families. It's critical work that we do, and I'm really proud to be there as commissioner. Here's my vision for the department. I want to streamline programs and revamp the workforce development system to ensure maximum effectiveness and efficiency within a sustainable budget. I'm currently pursuing a realignment of the workforce development programs in the department that would return the department to a fiscal year 2003 structure of having the programs administered by the Employment Security Division instead of a separate business partnerships division. And we estimate that the realignment of these programs alone and these services could result in a nearly $850,000 reduction to the state's coffers. Given declining funding, this revamp is critical to ensuring that maximum amount of funds possible is going out on the streets as grants for training and workforce development opportunities, and less money is being used and consumed by administrative overhead. I'm also very focused, as is our governor, on increasing Alaska resident hire to ensure that Alaskans are getting Alaskans jobs. Part of this will be addressed through more targeted workforce development funding in areas with high non-resident hire rates. And the other part will be through an increased focus on Alaska resident hire enforcement. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development is charged by statute to enforce the state's resident hire laws. Hiring Alaskans to fill Alaska's jobs is critical to the economic success of our state and the residents that we serve. Alaska has one of the highest ratios of non-resident to resident workers in the nation, which impacts the rate of unemployment among residents. Non-resident workers use services provided by the state, but do not contribute fairly to the cost of those services because the state has no personal income tax or sales tax. Alaskans suffer economically when non-residents displace qualified residents, since resident workers contribute to local taxes as well as their share of the royalties from natural resources. I will also continue to focus on the department's other key priority programs areas of ensuring economic stability for injured, unemployed, and disabled Alaskans, and ensuring safe and legal working conditions for Alaska's workers. Thank you.
I'm going to take a brief at ease, and then if the committee members want to go through the slides there for a few minutes, if it inspires any questions, we'll come back and ask the commissioner before we dismiss her. We don't want to really dismiss you.
Yeah. I understand. Thanks, Senator.
Take a brief at ease.
Thank you, Commissioner. We do have at least one other question. Senator Machicki.
Commissioner, we hear a lot of folks talking about certain industries that have a high non-resident rate, and some of them are incorrect. Some of them just make a lot of assumptions. I know I read your residence worker report every year, and it's a very informative document. But just a couple of the, you know, oil and gas residency is fairly high, but a couple of the other, like construction and seafood processing, I separate fishing from seafood processing because seafood processing has a low, very low residency rate. But what could be solutions for those two industries that where those people move around the country and work seasonally in many different areas? I mean, is that one of the places that you're talking about improving the residence rate, or do you have some ideas on increasing resident workers?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, it's a very good question, and we are digging in. And in fact, just last week, I had a meeting with Julianne Curry with the United Fishermen of Alaska to talk about how to increase Alaska hire in the seafood industry. And we've worked with the Pacific Seafood Processors Association. I told them I am interested in working with ways to employ Alaskans on those jobs. As far as specifics, that's what we're going to dig into, is see how we can do that. We have had a successful prisoner reentry program. We kind of had a pilot program in one area. I forget the correctional facility that we used, but we actually reemployed several, released prisoners into the seafood processing industry, and it turned out that a lot of those prisoners were some of the, or former prisoners, were some of the best performing workers in that particular plant. And there is an interest to develop and further broaden that program to other processors. So that's one area. It's like it's a win-win-win. You employ Alaskans on seafood processing jobs, and you get them. You can reduce recidivism at the same time. And there's a lot of these areas I think we can do. We had the presentation of the recidivism reduction plan to the House Finance Committee a couple weeks ago, and that's something that the Department of Labor and Workforce Development is very interested in and focused on as far as a means to reemploy Alaskans on jobs and reduce recidivism. So that's one way that we're looking at that as possibly enhancing that program. But there are going to be a lot of other ideas that we have, and our department is working on that. And I was specifically addressing seafood processing, but you know, we're open to all areas. That report is very detailed. They do a great job at research and analysis of the Department of Labor. It's a fantastic report, but there are several areas. Construction is one of them. Oil and gas is another one. And what we would like to do is work with industry to kind of develop a collaboration with them, a cooperation to figure out ideas that we can continue to train and put our own on the job. And if that means that we need to enhance some of our programs or our private partnerships to develop those training opportunities, then we need to do that. And that's part of what we're doing as we evaluate our own programs.
Just to follow up.
Senator Chickie.
Yeah, through the chair. I mean, it's just challenging. It'd be nice for a way to for Alaskans to understand some of the things that people do for a living are just simply seasonal. I mean, we talk about construction and seafood processing and tourism. I mean, there just may not be opportunities to keep them in state. And how you define residency is an elusive number as well. It's challenging. I mean, it's difficult to keep someone here as a resident in the tourist industry when they have an 8-week season. Some of those folks move their guides elsewhere. They work on other tour operators. I mean, I don't know. I think you almost have to separate those categories in order for us to understand. Anyway, it's a challenge.
Senator Bishop, did you have another question?
Yeah, just a quick follow-up on this topic, and I won't riff on, but I just something that I saw happen in the Kalis agreement on the royalty relief, that a nut that I had tried to crack and I couldn't get it cracked, but evidently the administration got it cracked. It was in the press release, at least I read that the administration, if they hit a number of 80% Alaska higher, I believe they would maybe get a little bit more royalty relief. Now I'm going off of memory, but I think I'm pretty close. And I was wrong yesterday on smallpox versus diphtheria on the Iditarod, but they both kill you. But but If the administration got it done, good on you.
So. Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
Just a quick comment.
Senator Chickie?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I would share those numbers as often as possible to help educate Alaskans on the true residency rates so that people aren't going off of assumptions. I think it's a very helpful number. They're very helpful numbers to help people understand the residence strength of our industries and where we do actually still have some work to do.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll just take a brief at ease as we switch out for Department of Military and Veterans
Affairs. Thank you.
Affairs. We're back, and we have Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We're going to walk through this, and if you guys want to state your names and affiliation for the record, we'll get going. And if, again, I didn't see any in your slideshow, but if we can skip the org charts and philosophy and mission statements and those kinds of things.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lauren Himmel, Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Dole, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
I don't believe I've met either one of you, so my apologies.
We'll get around to your office, I'm sure, sir.
Okay. Thanks.
My understanding is that our request this morning was to present the differences between our FY 2015 management plan and the FY 2016 amended budget, the governor's amendment. And so I call your attention to this slide, which shows in the first column the 2015 plan, the 2016 amendment, and I'm going to explain what we see in column three, the differences between the two, the decrements from the 2015 management plan to the 2016 governor's amended budget. Next slide, please. And so these first two slides go specifically to the first entry in the third column, or the $6.7 million decrement between the management and the governor's amended plan. And here are the biggest items in the unrestricted general fund category, 4.175 Alaska Aerospace Corporation. So this is an elimination of UGF operating and sustainment funds, and a pursuance of contracts by Alaska Aerospace Corporation. The next item is a $315 million decrement for Interior Veterans Cemetery operations. Unfortunately, the Interior Veterans Cemetery has been delayed due to unavailability of federal funds. So the feds have redistributed funds away from construction of cemeteries to operations of existing cemeteries, and we can't operate it until they build it.
Just for the record, that was $350,000.
Yeah, you're correct. I just got that note here from Mr. Dole.
Just a moment, Senator Bishop, and then Senator Hoffman.
Commissioner, walk me through this Interior Veterans Cemetery operation. So we purchased. Let's see, didn't you purchase some property to move for the new cemetery in Fairbanks?
That's correct. We do own the land.
So this is nothing. Does this affect that new cemetery? How does this affect the new cemetery? And if you need a lifeline or to get back with us, that's fine.
No, we have the answer, sir.
Through the chair, basically the requirements for putting the interior cemetery into Fairbanks, for the federal government to pick up their portion, the state had to find a suitable location with suitable conditions. We did that. We purchased that. Now the federal government has to go in and lay it out and build it. They have delayed doing their part. Once they delay it, we will operate it, and there'll be in the future we'll need to increase it up to this amount again. But until they build it, there's nothing to operate it, and it's a federal obligation to our veterans to build it.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then what does the department believe is the timeline now for the completion of the cemetery? Is there any indication at the federal level when this might take place?
As of now, it looks like next year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Continue. Oh, Senator Chickie, sorry.
And I, Commissioner, just wanted to state for the record, this isn't the first year we've deferred the operating funds. I think everyone's in support of the cemetery. But for FY15, this was also on the DMVA request, and we no reason to provide operating funds for a cemetery that's not operating.
Go ahead.
The next item is $300,000 toward base realignment and closure impact assistance. We've had a contract for outside assistance to advocate for sustainment of our military installations. That contract will come to a close and will not be renewed. Next slide, please. Continuing on with the decrements in the UGF, we also have $350,000 for Army Guard facilities maintenance, and we anticipate cost savings by moving some of these facilities from 100% state status to 75-20 fund state-federal matching funds in anticipation of activities toward repurposing. The next item is state-federal match funds for pre-disaster mitigation activities in our department, our Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. We will have to reduce some pre-disaster mitigation activities. These were determined to be the least impactful with regard to planning for communities, and it does not impact disaster response.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it fair to make the assumption then that the $133,600 general fund dollars would leverage 75?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct.
$1,000? So we would be paying $2 per and receive $1 from the federal government in very round numbers?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Next slide. Next slide, please.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Can we go back to the last slide for a second?
Slide 4.
Yes, the decreases that you showed us in bullet points here amount to $5.3 million. Was the difference between 6.7 and 5.3 PCN reductions?
No, I'm going to ask for a lifeline from Susan, who is our Administrative Services Director.
Could you restate your question, because the numbers didn't make sense to me?
Yes, the changes that were shown in bullet points amount to $5.3 million, but the decrements that are UGF decrements shown on slide 2 show $6.7 million.
It's $100,000, $500,000. You're on a different slide. I asked slide 4.
So if you total all the bullet points up, it's $5.3 million.
And for the chair, Senator Machicki, for the record, my name is Susan Culligan, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We presented some of the larger items for reduction for the budget. We had some smaller items. There were three other smaller items, decrements, Air Guard facilities. There was a $94,500 decrease. We're looking into efficiencies within that division. We also had $68,200 for a food service position in AMIA, Alaska Military Youth Academy. That basically is a vacant position, a recently vacated position. We also had a reduction of $13,700 in National Guard Military Headquarters. We're looking for administrative efficiencies there. We also have, in those net numbers, and if you need, I can give you get you the detail for those. But the first slide, those are net numbers. So we also had increases in personal services due to contractual increases. So those are in that number as well. I believe for benefits for staff, those are decreases again this year. So that is a net number. We gave you the large decrements that were included in the governor's budget. I can get you a more detailed description if you'd like.
Thank you. Just for everyone's information. We were on slide two.
Mr. Chairman, follow up?
Go ahead.
So that was a 1.462 gap, and you just gave me $150,000. I'd like to know where the other $1.3 million in cuts are, just to understand in detail. We can, and we can do that later, but thank you.
We'll get that information to you.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
Back to page four of the slides. These are details pertaining to the $4.6 million increases in federal dollars. And specifically, the big chunks of that are the Alaska Aerospace Corporation and the money that comes from the feds for the non-federal launch facilities. The Alaska Military Youth Academy, we expect to have a $4 million grant that's going to be spread out over 3 years for a pilot program to develop a 5-month residential vocational training program that will follow graduation from our Military Youth Academy Challenge Program. And the goal there is to graduate from this training program 100 of our 300 AMU graduates per year, of which 50% will be court-involved youth. So that's a good news story. The last item is $250,000 Office of Veterans Affairs, another great thing. We have been awarded a federal grant to offset transportation costs for veterans coming from out areas on the road and ferry through the ferry system to receive veteran services. And this is federal money.
Senator Dunleavy.
Chair, do these grants come with what are the strings attached, and is there a maintenance of effort component? In other words, once we set the grants up and we set the folks, the constituents that are receiving the grants up, is there an expectation that eventually the grant goes away, it times out, and that it's expected the state will backfill this with GF money?
I would have to get details from Mr. Roses on the AMU grant and from Verdi Bowen on the Veterans Affairs grant. I don't know if there's an expectation that these grants are a one-time shot or if they're long-term programs. Right now we're... and here's Mr. Dole to give us more information.
Through the chair, when the federal dollars are gone, these supplemental programs are gone. They're 100% federally funded, either to increase the number of people eligible to get into apprentice programs or to get vets in areas like Sterling to the Kenai Seabuck and operations like that. But there's no overhead we're putting in place of state employees for these. When the federal dollars are gone, these programs are gone without a residual state obligation.
Chair, just a quick comment. The budget issue, the fiscal issues that we're facing has caused many of us to ask questions we've never asked before. And one of the things that at least our office is finding is there's numerous grants for various departments that are taken on yearly that not only, and I'm thank you for the explanation, but not only put us on the hook for a maintenance of effort concept, if it doesn't put us on the hook for maintenance of effort concept, it puts us on the hook because if the program goes away, you have a constituency that's already been used to the program. But the grants can come through without any legislative approval at all. That's been delegated away years ago. And the money is the funding is the issue as it goes away, but the other issue is policy changes in some of our larger grants that are coming in from the federal government. And I bring up education as an example. And so it's just an issue that we're uncovering, we're thinking through, and I may be having larger discussions with the group because we're suffering the GF issue, but we just need to be careful that we've got federal grants coming in that change policy and cause us to maintain what these grants are asking for through GF down the road.
Senator McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to slide two, I'm looking at other and general funds. So it appears that there's an overall increase, at least percentage-wise, and a small, and it looks, in actuality, the We're seeing a $2 million increase, though. There's a couple questions there. If you could explain to the Senate Finance Committee your other dollar gains that are almost 35-36%, and then talk to the committee about how the deduction for $4.175 million from the aerospace is replaced with $3 million, basically, in federal receipts. And so if the difference is made up in other, I need to know that. But in addition, I'd like a little bit of drill down on other receipts, other revenues that you're using.
Sure. The $4.296 million on the other includes $4.175 of aerospace receipts and salary increases, which are incremental and pre-negotiated with the state. The federal line of $4.668 immediately beneath it includes about $3 from aerospace, the $1.3 in federal grant to AMIA, $250,000 Veteran Services Transportation Grant, and salary increases.
Senator McKinnon.
Commissioner, thank you for restating. So there is a basically no GF. It goes to what Senator Dunleavy was talking about. We've allowed aerospace to collect receipts and then have additional spending authority for the federal grant. It looks like there is something smaller, about $120,000 in other, that still hasn't been identified. But you said 4.175 in aerospace receipts under other?
Yes, ma'am, plus salary increases.
So that's the $120,000?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Continue. Senator Machicki, did you have a question?
I do. Just, I think you're getting toward the end here. What did the House, it'd be interesting to see a House slide here. So you're demonstrating on UGF 6.7, of which we've identified 5.485 million, and we were going to talk about other details for the remaining 1.286 million that's remaining. But what did it look like after the House subcommittee?
Through the chair, Commissioner Hummel wasn't on board yet, and I did most of those hearings, so I'll address that. Basically, the House increased their decrements by approximately another 400,000, looking at elimination of a position in the commissioner's office, the elimination of more of the pre-mitigation funding, also looking at some other savings in Army and Air Guard facilities on top of what you're seeing here.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the governor made his State of the State address to the joint session, he indicated that he was going to pursue expansion of the National Guard in different areas of the state, particularly in rural Alaska. I don't see anything in this budget for that, and how does the department plan on accomplishing that in FY16?
Through the chair, Senator, revitalization of the Alaska Guard in rural Alaska is one of our objectives, but there's nothing in the budget this year because, frankly, it's a complicated issue, and we have to look into how best to accomplish that. And also, we hope to leverage federal funds for increased recruitment and for transportation and training expenses that would be incurred from having more membership in rural areas of Alaska.
If I might continue, Mr. Chairman, what communications, if any, has the department had with our congressional delegation regarding this mission?
Through the chair, none as of yet, but I've been on the ground for 1 month now, and we're starting to put together a task force for rural revitalization, and it will begin meetings as soon as Sergeant Major Hildreth, who will be the chair of that task force, is released from his current position in the Guard to come work as my senior enlisted leader. Within the next month or so, we will be naming members to the task force, and we will have a calendar for meetings, and congressional delegation will be invited, as well as the governor and lieutenant governor, to any and all planning meetings that are going to make the foundation for the changes that we hope to make toward revitalization.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, just one comment on the $1.3 million Fed award for the AMAYA Academy. And I know it says it anticipates this funding for a 40-month period. I don't need an answer now. It's just a comment, and you could follow up. But I would like to know a little bit more detail. And to dovetail on Senator Dunleavy's earlier comments, there are a tremendous amount of training assets in Anchorage, and I'm just going to make a statement, not knowing your mission here, to not go out and reinvent the wheel on training programs when you might be able to partner with a lot of assets that are already in place in the Anchorage area. Thank you.
We will get more information through the chair. We will provide you with more information regarding the Department of Labor Grant Center.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, thank you, Commissioner. Deputy Commissioner, appreciate it. Brief at ease. That pretty much concludes our business for today. Tomorrow we're going to hear from Law, Commerce, and Education. And if you could prepare questions for that, that'd be great. Any other business? Senator Olson, welcome. Back from your flight. Let the record show that you attended most of the meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this the time to ask questions?
Certainly, except our guests are all gone.
Doesn't have anything to do with the guests. You're talking about tomorrow. We're going to hear more budget. I'm assuming then we still do or do not have a finance meeting this afternoon.
We do. Yeah. And what is on the agenda for that?
Mr. Co-Chair, marijuana, SB 30. We have a CS that is on the table that has not been adopted. And so that was sent out to offices for review and then presented yesterday.
Okay. Any other business come before the committee? Hearing none, we are adjourned until 1:30.